The views and opinions of this program are those of its hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
Hello, KKFI listeners, and welcome to Trans Talk, this week's edition of The 10th Voice. I'm Una Nowling, here with my wife and co-hostess Fiona Nowling, and behind the board today is our wonderful sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson. We have two guests with us in the studio today. We're going to start with registered nurse Kim Tilson, who will be here to tell us all about the second annual Trans Health Inclusion Conference, which is coming up in just about 2 weeks right here in Kansas City. And she will also talk a bit about the past and present state of transgender health care. After a musical break, we will be joined by Ari Copeland, a senior water scientist and transgender advocate, who is going to discuss in depth some of the transgender news of the month with myself and Fiona in a roundtable, sort of a break from my usual news update, which many of my listeners refer to as Una's news rant. I guess we can call this the Gender Rainbow McLaughlin Group or something. I also want to add a special note to Ms. Heather Jean out there, who wrote me a very heartfelt letter I just received this last week. Heather Jean, one of the reasons we do our show is precisely to give encouragement to people such as yourself who are facing incredible odds and are nonetheless persevering. Heather Jean, neither myself, Fiona, or the entire 10th Voice crew are going to stop fighting for truth and our rights, and nor shall we cease lifting up the spirits of our community where we're able to and throwing ashes into the eyes of those who would keep us in the closet, beat us down, or even take our lives for the crime of simply living our lives as our true selves, with pride in our people, with strength in our movement, and with faith in ourselves. We will not stop. Unless, of course, we're all hit by the Kansas City trolley, which may soon be passing right in front of our studio here if the latest ballot measure passes. Fiona will finish up the show with the community calendar update, but first, I'm going to take a look at some of the LGBT news of the week. A transgender woman who was beaten and left beside a trash bin in Charlotte, North Carolina last November 30th has sadly died of her injuries, making her the 11th known transgender homicide victim this year. Sherelle Faulkner, age 46, died May 16th at the Carolinas Medical Center in Charlotte as a result of the November attack. Some have said that we are facing a growing trend of anti-transgender violence as a result, with 11 transgender people, many of them transgender people of color, murdered in 2017. Trump's Justice Department released a forceful, and it's unfortunate that I even have to say this, surprising statement reaffirming its commitment to prosecuting bias-related crimes against transgender persons. Even more shocking was that Attorney General Jeff Sessions also promised to use his power to protect transgender persons. The department's statement follows the sentencing Monday of Joshua Brandon Vallum to 49 years in prison. I certainly don't want to shorten his sentence any, for the 2015 murder of his transgender girlfriend, Mercedes Williamson. Vallum was prosecuted under the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act and represents the first case prosecuted under that law that involved a person targeted for their gender identity. I quote, "Today's sentencing reflects the importance of holding individuals accountable when they commit violent acts against transgender individuals. The Justice Department will continue its efforts to vindicate the rights of those individuals who are affected by bias-motivated crimes," unquote. And that's actually Jeff Sessions who said this, which is somewhat unexpected, I guess some would say bizarre, because he, as an Alabama senator, worked very diligently to defeat this very hate crimes act, which President Obama signed into law in 2009. Sessions continues to oppose marriage equality, despite it being the Supreme Court-affirmed law of the land. And as Attorney General, he has withdrawn Obama-era guidelines on how schools should accommodate transgender students. On what LGBT activists are calling Discrimination Sunday, Texas lawmakers advanced bills allowing anti-LGBT discrimination by adoption agencies and restricting restroom use by transgender students in public schools. First, the Texas State Senate approved House Bill 3959, allowing faith-based adoption agencies, including those that receive state funding, to base their decisions about child placement on their religious beliefs, even if that means discriminating against people based upon their sexual preference, gender identity, or gender presentation. The bill now goes to the governor's office for signature. The second shoe to drop was the Texas House giving final approval to its anti-transgender bathroom bill, preventing transgender students from using multiple occupancy restrooms that correspond to their gender identity. The Senate must now sign off on it before it goes to the governor, who has said that banning transgender persons from proper bathrooms is his top priority for this legislative session, because obviously Texas doesn't have any real problems. I guess they have to invent some. Two transgender cadets, one at the U.S. Air Force Academy and the other at West Point, where the Army trains its soldiers, will be allowed to graduate this month after passing their exams, but will not be eligible to enlist and serve, and their proper name and gender identity will not be recognized. The cadets are stuck in this limbo because under the Trump administration, the Pentagon has yet to establish procedures for accepting openly transgender soldiers into its ranks. Last year, then-Defense Secretary Ash Carter ended the Pentagon ban on transgender troops, allowing them to serve openly, but no policies were set in place. Allegedly, that is scheduled to be developed and phased in this year. Good news from Buenos Aires, Argentina, where Analia Pasantio is about to become the first transgender chief of police. This is a milestone, Pasantio is quoted as saying. I'm the first transgender police chief in Latin America. It's an unprecedented and important step to show Latin America and the world as a whole that we are an open institution. The world has changed, she said. You can live a life of gender identity and it's no longer necessary to live a double life. And I have to admit, living a double life can be incredible. Difficult. Very few people know that I'm on the radio. Good news from Taiwan, where their constitutional court declared on Wednesday that same-sex couples have the right to legally marry, the first such ruling in Asia at that level. The court said that current marriage laws were in violation of both the people's freedom of marriage and the people's right to equality, and it gave 2 years for legal amendments to allow same-sex marriage, or else by default, they would be allowed equally. Good news from Connecticut, where in what is described as the speediest signing of a bill passed by their legislature, Governor Danielle Malloy outlawed conversion therapy to change the sexual orientation or gender identity and expression of youth. Quote, this is supported by the science, unquote, Governor Malloy told legislators and advocates gathered around his desk just before signing the bill into law. Connecticut is the ninth state to ban this practice. Good news from Missouri, where local greeting card company Hallmark has started selling its first ever pro-transgender greeting card. The card is listed under Encouragement Transgender Transitioning and features a green butterfly on the front with the words, quote, you're becoming who you've always been, unquote. Inside the card says, quote, how wonderful is that, unquote. Good news from Kansas. Wait, I better read that again. That doesn't sound right. Yes, there is actually good news from Kansas. Apparently, the news is that one of several transgender bathroom bills was defeated in the Kansas House this week. Freshman Republican Trevor Jacobs of Fort Scott, Kansas, attempted to add a measure targeting transgender students in Kansas by banning them from using bathrooms, locker rooms, and other facilities that were in line with their gender identity. The House Rules Committee declared the measure out of order and denied it after a very lopsided voice vote. Finally, in my Caitlyn Jenner roasting of the month, which many have come to expect, it has been noted that Jenner's memoirs, released upon the unsuspecting public, barely 4 weeks ago, are already being found in the bargain bin at several booksellers. One major book megastore in New York is actually facing a dilemma, having literally hundreds of unsold copies that they would like to return to the publisher, but they cannot because they have all been personally autographed by Jenner, ironically somehow making them worth less than the unautographed copies. This concludes the transgender news of the week, but stay tuned for the second half of our program where we will dig into some of the bigger news items in depth.
With us today, we have registered nurse Kim Tilson, who has helped to organize a local event focused upon transgender health, the second annual Trans Health Inclusion Conference. Hello, Kim, and welcome to Trans Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Kim, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I've been a registered nurse for about 7.5 years now. And one of the reasons I became a nurse is through my transition process. When I first started, I had to learn how to give myself shots for my hormone treatment. And that's what allowed me to get over a severe fear of needles. And through that, I started seeing some of the other issues that other people were having. So I looked at healthcare as a way to help the others around me that I saw struggling. I figured if I could help make a difference to some of the other people that are going through some of the same challenges that we're going through, then that would help them transition, and it's my way to be able to give back. I've worked at multiple different hospitals here in the Kansas City region and kind of helped develop some transgender programs and some inclusion at those different facilities. And I must say that I've been very fortunate with each of those facilities as I've transitioned to be welcomed and not to have to deal with a whole lot of problems in the workplaces. So Kansas City has been a very great welcoming community. And thankfully, I have been blessed to work with great people who have managed to make my transition much easier and much more comfortable.
This is called Transa City sometimes, after all, so.
And I know you're involved with organizing the Trans Health Conference next month, but before we talk about that, could we talk about transgender healthcare in general? So what does transgender healthcare mean to you?
Well, a lot of people look at transgender healthcare and they think that it's just about hormones. They think that it's just about transitioning. But one of the most important things to remember is that they're a person and they have a lot of different things that they need to be treated for. It's just like treating any other type of condition. It's not a disease, but it does require treatment, which is why in the newest version of the DSM, they kept it in as dysphoria so that we could still get the necessary treatment that we need and hopefully be able to have insurance coverage in order to do that. So what's really important about trans health care is you need to keep in mind that they need the mental health care. Even if they don't have specific issues, there's a lot of issues that you have to deal with when you transition. You have family members that you have to try to come out to, you have to deal with. You have coworkers that you have to try to help adjust to the process. You have employers. You have all of the businesses that you do with. You have to deal with walking around in public, trying to use a separate bathroom than you're used to. And it's a lot of adjustment to have to make. So you do need those mental health services. It doesn't mean that you're mentally ill. It just means that you need that help to make it through these difficult situations.
That is a wonderful point. That really captured it very well. The feeling that when you're fighting anti-transgender persons online or sometimes in person, they will bring up, well, what about this high suicide rate? What about all these other, you know, psychosocial problems that they face? That must mean that you're really just crazy, and not recognizing that, no, it really is a result of having to live and exist and fight back against a society that is crashing down upon you, trying to prevent you from doing that.
So very true.
It would be a bit like putting a sane person into a mental asylum and drugging them and treating them as if they were crazy. And by the end of it, they would be, because they have to keep fighting back and trying to assert their truth.
Very much so. Along with the mental health care, the other things that you have to keep in mind, that as people age, their body needs to heal. They're going to get sick. They may need hospitalization. And with that, they also need to make sure that they receive primary care. One of the big issues that trans people have with primary care, trying to find a doctor that just to give their general medicine, their annual checkup, is they forget that they are just a person, and they worry that that they're worried about treating the transgender part of them, and they focus on that. We just need to step back and remember that they are simply a person that needs treated for standard medical conditions.
I do know that at least one of the doctors in the region that treats people for their transition hormones also accepts the same patients as their primary care physician, because that means then they don't have to come out to another doctor or still go in and introduce themselves to someone as female but still have to ask for a prostate check in what may not be a welcoming environment.
That can be an issue, and I do see that. I work in a facility where we have a very high level of diversity, both in LGBT folks and in just international diversity. In clinic one day, we went through 5 separate languages. And with that, that just shows how diverse we are. The nice thing is that there are doctors out there that are willing to take on that care, even if they don't know what they're doing. A large number of the physicians are willing to ask the questions, and they're willing to learn with their patients. As a trans woman myself, I have had to educate most of the physicians that I've worked with. But the best part of that is that they have been willing to work with me. The first thing that I can tell trans people out there, as you're looking for your physician, be honest with them. It's very scary to come out and have to tell somebody that you're transgender. But at the same point, you're going to find out when you tell them that if there's somebody that you're going to be able to respect to provide your care. And if they're not willing to do that, simply ask them, well, thank you very much. Is there somebody that you could refer me to? One of the issues that I've seen as a registered nurse is it's very difficult when you're put in that situation and you have to deal with that person that is rejecting you. It's very hard to take that rejection. So with that, don't get upset. Remember, there are people out there that care, that want to take care of you. And if you stay persistent, in the long run, while you may take longer finding that special person to provide your care, it'll be so much more worth it, because you're going to feel safe, not only in your transition, but also in your generalized health.
That is really very powerful and very fundamental. We're going to take a short break for a station announcement and then return to talk more with registered nurse Kim Tilson.
Welcome back to Trans Talk. We're here with registered nurse Kim Tilson. And I'd like to ask you now, what about people who get rejected by doctors, or even worse, someone is willing to treat them but they're ignorant and treat them as a stereotype, perhaps just asking them about AIDS and things because they've seen statistics?
Well, that's a good question. It is very difficult when you're put in that situation. As I said before, the biggest thing that I would recommend is don't get upset. It is very difficult to find those people. And one of the things to really keep in mind is that a lot of times they believe that they are doing the best that they can to help you. Those stereotypes are definitely a major issue. I'm also the current president of the Kansas City Regional Association of Nurses in AIDS Care. And with that, it is very important to keep in mind our sexual health. Whether we have a lot of people that have to deal with AIDS, with hepatitis C, with different issues. And a lot of that is because of the situations that they're put into. We have a very diverse socioeconomic status, and with that comes a lot of challenges. While those questions are important, we need to keep in mind that we're also taking care of that patient. So if you do have that problem with that doctor that is marginalizing you or putting you into a box, you know, see them to take care of what you need to. But keep your search on. Make sure that you're taking care of yourself and that you're watching your health and doing what you need to do to be healthy and safe. And keep looking. Keep asking. There are resources out there that will help you. This show will help provide you with specific resources so that you can find your way and find that loving provider that you need.
Thank you. And perhaps an example of some good healthcare, good trans-inclusive healthcare would be helpful for our listeners so they know what to look out for, or helpful for anyone in the medical profession listening.
One of the biggest things that's important with trans healthcare is honesty. If you're not open and honest with your provider, then it's going to cause problems with your health. If they don't know everything going on with you, there are so many issues that can come up from that. One of the biggest things that we see is it's difficult for trans people to get the hormones that they want and that they need for their mental health and to just be who they are. So a lot of people try things. They order different medications over the internet to try. They do different herbal supplements to try to supplement their hormonal therapy and everything. It's very important when you speak with a doctor that you mention all of these issues, everything that you're taking, all of your mental issues, all the stress that you're under, problems sleeping, all of that comes together to play into the overall physical and mental health of each individual patient. So the first thing that I would say is find that provider that you can be open and honest with. And if you get to a point where you feel like they're starting to judge you, look for somebody else. And I know some other people that have had issues with healthcare providers that got very rude with them. And what can happen also, unfortunately, is sometimes they will put out a negative word on you, so it makes it even more difficult to find that provider. So keep looking and be diligent in taking care of yourself.
I do know that good doctors in all sorts of fields exist out there for trans people. And I've done searches myself, and I've seen some websites for doctors, instead of just saying we're LGBT welcoming, they actually put the preferred gender pronouns of their staff on the About Our Staff page, which shows that they actually know issues and they're upfront about it and are educated about it. So that would be a good sign for someone looking for a provider, for instance.
That's a good point. I saw when I was looking for doctors to treat me that were trans friendly, they would say LGBT friendly, but what they really meant was LG, maybe sometimes B's, and they're not so sure about those T's, but why not? We'll give it a shot.
Definitely. One of the things that is nice, though, is that especially with all of the recent press that we've had with Caitlyn Jenner, Chaz Bono, multiple other people, whether it's positive or negative press, the big thing is it's actually getting people to pay attention to us. And the nice thing with that is we have so many doctors out there. The reason they're doctors, the reason we have nurses is because they care about people. And a lot of them, while they may not be completely comfortable with it, they are willing to reach out and learn with you. And if they do stumble, just say, excuse me, could you please use my correct pronoun? Call them out on it politely, and most of them will do everything they can to take care of you.
Yes, and a friend told me they went to a doctor's and the intake form actually had a checkbox for whether you were transgender or gender non-binary and a space for their preferred name so that they could be called specifically different to what was going to go to the insurance billing, and that they nearly burst into tears with relief when they saw that. So things are making progress.
Definitely. One of the nice things that's going on, the Joint Commission who oversees hospital and clinical operations, one of the recommendations that they've made is that this data is collected so that you do identify people properly. One of the things that I've asked the staff in the clinic that I work in to do is when people check in at the front desk to simply ask them, how do you prefer to be addressed? If you make that simple step, you're not singling out anyone or identifying anyone, because that simple statement, they're like, well, but, you know, people get upset with that. Well, you know, all you have to say is some people don't go by their first name or their last name. A lot of people get upset. They don't want to be Mr. Smith or Miss Smith. So a lot of people go by their middle name. So we're just trying to respect everyone equally and approach them the way they want to be approached.
That's a good way to do it. And moving on from you educating people at your actual area to the Trans Health Conference, can you tell me how that got started and how that's going?
I currently work at Truman Medical Center, and I used to work in the infectious disease clinic. And through coordination that we have with the Casey Care Clinic and also with our group, the Association of Nurses in AIDS Care, we have different speakers come in that do education for us. And the two organizations got together, and a lot of it kind of started when I started my transition. One of the big misconceptions is we have a lot of people out there that think they work with trans people so they know all about them. Well, the best saying that I've ever heard is if you know one trans person, you know one trans person. Every situation is different, and when they saw me transition on the job, they started asking questions and learning more. And being open is a very big part of that. So through the questioning and everything and working with these two organizations to start with, we tried for a few years to pull something together, and we would do a class here and a class there to get some education out, but we were really looking for something bigger. And I think kind of the straw that broke the camel's back that allowed us to do it was actually Caitlyn Jenner coming out, because that was the big thing that made national news, and it made people start to pay attention. Good or bad, it made people pay attention.
People criticize me because I do needle her a little bit, but it's in a bit of good humor. I don't know.
She does things that are worthy of needling.
Sometimes.
Yes.
I think we all do.
Yes, exactly. So, can you tell me when it is and where it is?
The conference this year is June 15th. It's from 8 to 4 p.m., and it's at the UMKC main campus at the Student Union.
So, briefly, who's speaking and what sort of topics are being covered, if anyone wanted to go?
One of the nice things that we've done, that we were trying to do with it, is last year, it was Trans 101. To try to get other people to start understanding transgender health care as well as transgender mental care. So this year what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring in new speakers. We're trying to expand on it so that we get even more education and we can keep people coming back over and over. One of the things that we're doing different this year is we're having four breakout sessions. We're not only focusing on trans physical health, but also mental health. As we said, treating a transgender person is just like treating anyone. They need the full scope of services, so we're trying to focus on both sides. It primarily focuses on healthcare workers, because those are the ones that we need to educate first so that we can get the care that we need. One of the nice things that we've got is some of the topics that we're doing are trans is not a fad. It's hormonal treatment in pediatric patients. We try to make sure that we focus on the entire spectrum because as people are starting to understand, becoming trans isn't something that you make a decision or it just happens. Most of us have known most of our lives that we were trans. And if we can start getting these children the treatment at a younger age, then that helps them become mature adults. So we have Dr. Jill Jacobson working on that. We have Asha Lee coming back with a Trans 101 just to kind of refresh for some of the people that didn't make it to last year's conference. We have a panel discussion coming in, and the focus of the panel discussion is to show that, raise that a taking care of a trans person takes a community. We need more than just that primary care provider or that healthcare worker. There are many services out there in the community that people need. For example, one of the big issues for a male-to-female transgender person is the voice. Most people think that you just start on hormones and it just happens. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of work to try to develop that.
It's probably too late for this year, but if anyone wanted to help by running a workshop or lead a group next year, who should they get in touch with?
One of the best things to look at is the KC Care website. Maytech has worked very closely with us to develop these conferences and help us put everything together. And they work out of the KC Care Clinic. And if you check out their website, there's a lot of information on training available. And there's also a link there to the conference and with all the conference information.
And a quick question, because it's mostly aimed at medical professionals, does it give you continuing education credits, CMEs or CNEs?
Yes, it does. We provide CMEs, CEUs, and the credits for the social workers. So we're covering physicians, nurses, social work, and all of the healthcare professionals.
Great. And if you're not a healthcare professional, people could go and they should check that KC Care website to get details, or Facebook, or how?
Yes, always look at that. And it is good also for people that are non-healthcare workers because these are topics that still do apply. It helps specifically with healthcare workers, but it also applies to that. For more information, you can also see transhealthconferencekc@gmail.com.
Do we have a link to that on our 10th Voice Facebook page, you think, or could we add one?
We could definitely add one.
That could make it easier.
Yes.
That would be wonderful.
Well, I think that this has been a really powerful interview, and I've learned a bit myself talking to you today, Kim. And, yeah, I've had I guess, exceptional luck with my trans healthcare overall, except for having been thrown out of one doctor's office because they weren't going to work on no dude who wanted breasts, basically. It's about what the nurse told me, almost verbatim. But I'd like to thank you very much for taking time from your busy schedule. I know that you nurses are always on the go, and plus having to run and contribute to this health inclusion conference for transgender people must be a significant challenge. So thank you so much for coming on Trans Talk today. We both really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short musical break and then return to talk a little bit about the news. Well, hello and welcome back to Trans Talk. The song we just played during the break was Summer Samba, as sung by Astrid Gilberto in 1966. I thought since most of us marked the start of summer as being Memorial Day weekend, it was rather appropriate. Plus, it's a bit lighthearted and kitschy, and I really love her voice. Each time I hear her sing, I sometimes pray, Great Mother Goddess Kuan Yin, if you magically give me Astrid Gilberto's voice, I promise to build several small temples in thy name. But it never works. So as I said earlier, each month I read the transgender news of the week in a summary that covers many topics, along with a little bit of snark and sarcasm, just a little bit. But we don't dive into the subjects in depth, and today we want to spend a little time with that in a roundtable here with myself representing all transgender women everywhere in the entire world. That's deliberate sarcasm for humorous effects, folks. Please don't send in angry letters. Fiona is here representing all sexy cisgender transgender lesbians who ride motorcycles. Again, sarcasm. And our friend Ari Copeland, a transgender advocate and the manliest transgender man that ever manned. And I'm not certain if that's sarcasm. So I want to kick this off with issue one, which is about the subject of trans face. It came to attention because the classic television show Twin Peaks has been rebooted, featuring the transgender character FBI agent Denise Richards, who was originally and currently portrayed by David Duchovny. And this character was a minor trailblazer when she appeared on the show in 1990, as there were no transgender characters at all on the on the mass media television scene. And as David Duchovny is recasting her role here, there's a large amount of criticism in the community that he should not be doing so, because it is showing significant insensitivity to transgender persons and doing what's called transface, which is a different version of what blackface would be called when whites portrayed African Americans or people of color. So the question is, in this case, it's a little vague because the actor originally introduced the role and is now reprising it. Is this a case of transface, and are there any cases where a cisgender actor really can portray a transgender character and not have it be offensive?
It's very hard to say, with this being the same character and the same actor, with it being a continuation of the original story. If it were a brand new show, it would be much easier to come down and say, no, they should really desperately actually be respecting people and giving a chance to trans actors and actresses out there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that's kind of my opinion on it. If it's a reboot of an old show, I don't really see anything wrong with the original actor playing the role. But if it was a brand new show featuring a trans person, then in my opinion, a trans person should be casted for that role. That's my opinion.
Are there any other cases that you could think of where it might be acceptable for a cisgender person to jump into a trans role, really?
And the silence says we're coming up with blanks at the moment.
I'm going to say pretty much not.
I have difficulty with the concept. It's like I've said before, it's kind of like asking Carrot Top to portray Nelson Mandela.
Right, exactly.
Well, here's a corresponding question. Since they so frequently have cisgender actors playing transgender actors, who do you think should be playing transgender women? Do you think cisgender man? Because it would give you more of a representative body type, and they might have more of an understanding of the issues trying to be that role, to be the opposite gender. Or do you think a cisgender woman, because that respects the true womanness inside the transgender person?
If I absolutely have to choose, if there was no other option whatsoever, then I would choose a cisgender male to portray the role of a transgender woman, because there a significant number of transgender women have the same phenotype, have the same are going to have similar problems with appearance. I would not. I think that there is a little bit of whitewashing going on in some cases where they pick a very attractive, cisgender actress to portray a transgender woman, as if we all suddenly can be as beautiful as, Calista Flockhart or whatever. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. If someone was portraying maybe like a trans guy too, it'd probably be better to have a cis female portray that role, for the very same reasons you just said, Una, so it's not like another Trans America or Boys Don't Cry is a good example, because that was Hilary Swank.
Yes.
It's actually
the
only movie I like her in. Ironically enough, I think she did a great job. I think that movie actually made her famous, right?
It was one of them.
Yeah.
It didn't do that great
box office-wise,
but it was very highly acclaimed.
Right.
So I want to go on to the second subject and talk that I also addressed in the news a bit briefly. There have been 11 transgender persons murdered this calendar year so far, almost all of them transgender women of color. And this brings up something that is a frequent source of debate within the community, especially because we are have been victims of violence throughout history. We continue to be victims of violence. And as we have this alt-Reich-fueled blogosphere atmosphere that is fueling a significant uptick in incidents throughout the country of intolerance and hate, I can only expect that we're going to suffer quite a bit more in the future. Unfortunately, because the LGBTQIA community has often had to align itself with the liberal side of politics, what comes with that is an anti-gun, an anti-self-defense philosophy, too. And I have actually been called transphobic by a local queer activist because I proposed forming groups to teach others in the community about situational awareness, self-defense, and firearms use. Their rationale was the fact that we have to take measures to defend ourselves means that we're giving in to transphobia. Thus, I must be the biggest transphobe that ever phobed or whatever. But I have always been a very stringent personal defense advocate. Ari, how does it feel coming from the having to live and work in the male side of the world? How do you feel about that?
I mean, I pretty much feel the same way you do. I mean, I think personally, I think people should, no matter who you are, if you're trans or whatever, you should be able to feel safe, right? And if gun ownership makes you feel safe and you pass background checks and you're able to have a gun legally and make good decisions and not, you know, go off the deep end like a lot of Americans do here with firearms, right? Then you should be able to have a gun. And I've actually faced the exact same thing you just described. As soon as I tell people my stance on gun ownership, which I'm definitely for, I've always been an advocate for people having guns and being able to protect themselves. You know, they automatically say, oh, you must be like some conservative nut job that wants to stockpile like 1,000 weapons and have like 800 assault rifles. And like, because sometimes they don't even know I'm trans, because looking at me, you probably wouldn't assume that, I guess. I don't know.
No.
So, you know, they automatically make that assumption. Or even if they do know I'm trans, they're like, oh, well, you're definitely not a liberal then. You're not forward-thinking then, right? You're giving in to the situation at hand. And what I say to them is, well, you know, there's idealism and then there's reality. So idealism is that you don't need to have a gun, that everyone who's supposed to protect you is going to protect you, a.k.a. the armed police, etc. But reality is that it takes time for the cops to respond, for one, and two, hopefully the cop that does respond will actually protect you.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been my experience. And that's, you know, my experience. And I'm not saying that all cops are bad or any of that kind of thing at all. But I'd rather have the right to protect myself, because I know me. I know I'm going to do it. So.
I think one of the things is that having grown up as a cisgender woman, I have grown up with an awareness of being prey. Mm-hmm. I've been socialized as prey, and you have the automatic thing when you're walking along the street at night and you hear footsteps behind you, you wonder if they're following you, so you cross the road to check whether they do cross with you. I think a lot of transgender women never got socialized like that, so they have this idea of confidence that they're not prey, and I may not be aware of the loss of strength with not having the testosterone anymore, and the fact that they think they can handle themselves and protect themselves because that's what they grew up being taught.
Right. Yeah, and I definitely know. I feel the exact same way. Like, whenever I'm, even to this day, which is kind of funny, because I haven't realized that how I look makes me safer. Like, that still hasn't, there's no consciousness with that still. And I don't know if it ever happened. I think that once it's enculturated in you, it's really hard to, like, throw that away.
Yes.
But even whenever I leave like a locked place and I'm walking to my car, especially if it's like at nighttime, I always take my keys out of my pocket and wedge them in my my fingers.
Yes,
in case someone tries to, you know, attack me, I can always just go like really hard and try to get away. So
I would never advocate that, you know, a whole horde of trans people descend upon the local gun stores like Mongol warriors, I guess. I think that there has to be more of a thought, though, of focusing on defense without the guilting and without the shaming of it. And it needs to go along a progression. Situational awareness, what you said, Fiona, I think is key. Avoid getting in the bad situations to begin with. And I will go on my soapbox here and say I have actually also been called transphobic because I have advocated for people to try to be careful for new transgender women, especially. You can't really go out at night alone to a club and leave by yourself and walk across a dark parking lot at 2 a.m. And people have told me that's a transphobic attitude. You should be able to walk anywhere that you want to at any time and not worry about being attacked. And I think, well, you know, I should also have a right to walk through the jungles of India and not be eaten by tigers. I just hope the tigers understand that.
Right. Yeah, that goes back to reality versus ideal. If this is a reality, we want the ideal. We're working towards the ideal, but this is a reality, and you have to live in reality. And I completely agree with that. I tell even trans people who are coming out and stuff, I tell them, I was like, your safety is the number one priority, so it's up to you to feel comfortable telling someone you're trans or not. There's nothing, it's not shame, or it's not being true to who you are if you decide not to tell that person, because ultimately your safety is the most important thing.
Yes, so. You can't live the true you if you do not live.
That's right.
If you do not feel safe, you cannot really express yourself. I will never say that getting a firearm automatically makes you safe. I will never advocate that someone should carry without having gone through extensive training and with a good knowledge that they need to engage in situational awareness first and other forms of conflict avoidance.
Right.
And I did a self-defense course, and Una took it with me, and it has some really useful tips about situational awareness, ones that I hadn't heard before even with other courses. Like, if you're going around a corner, turning a corner around a building to change streets, take a wide angle around that so that you are out of arm's reach of anyone that might be waiting on the other corner that you can't see yet, so you have time to react and respond. Little things like that are really useful.
That was a very useful course, because the instructor, you know, I've been to courses where they do like rape awareness training, and the instructors are very gentle with you. Like, I've grabbed your arm, now break free. And they don't do, you know, this course we took, he grabbed our arms so hard that we could feel the bones move, and said, now, this is what it's going to be like in real life. Now see if you can break free.
Yes, they taped our wrists to protect them from damage whilst practicing breaking holds, which they've never done at any other self-defense course. They usually just have students hold each other's wrists, and you're worried about hurting someone, so you just hold it loosely. That doesn't help you in what might be a panic situation.
Yeah, that's right. Simulation is very important. I took similar classes with that, where they actually did real life simulations where they grabbed you really hard and wouldn't let go. And you know, you always get that, I don't know if you see the movies where they portray that, where the guy's in the big suit and you have to beat him up. Yeah, it's like my favorite part of the class. I love that part of the class. But I mean, I think it just goes back to overall is that you need to understand reality and prepare yourself to defend yourself however you want to. It doesn't mean you have to go get a gun. You could take a course like that. I've done that because I used to not feel comfortable owning a gun.
Right.
But it took me classes and talking to people to understand a gun is really just a tool, and not everyone that owns a gun is crazy and going to go shoot up a post office. Right? Because that's what the American news, that's all you see. You just see people using guns in irresponsible ways.
Exactly.
And that's not the case for most people that own guns.
There is a middle ground, I think.
Right.
I want to go on to the last topic of the day, which has to do with a recent protest over the Lou Reed song, specifically his 1972 hit Walk on the Wild Side, which was in some way telling a story of many of the transgender women that Lou Reed had as very good friends and associates and companions during that same era of the early 70s, along with the group of transgender persons that Andy Warhol kind of collected around him, almost like Pokemon cards, I guess. recently, University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada, issued an apology for including the song on a playlist at a campus event, claiming that the song had tremendously transphobic lyrics and also dehumanized and fetishized transgender people by suggesting that they are, quote, wild, unquote. They also noted that no transgender person had actually expressed any discomfort or problem with the song, but they wanted to err on the side of being a bit overly protective. I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit wild. It brings up a point, too, that, again, I faced criticism on my website, Trans a City, which contains a large amount of historical articles. I will use the birth names of many historical figures, and I've had people very angrily tell me that you should never use the birth name even of a historical person. So about the song, any comments about it, or about the historically speaking, is it okay to say things are a product of their times, or do we really need to consign some of these things to the ash heap of history?
I was going to say that you can say that things are a product of the times, but perhaps include a warning for people. Like, there's a lot of books that use the N-word that are getting banned for that, when there is a useful teaching thing that can be done, as long as you are sensitive to the feelings of students and you make people aware that this is how people used to live and what people used to have to endure. They still have to endure racism and other oppression now, but it is at least improving, and being aware of where people have come from can help with that. And it's the same with the T word.
Yeah, I agree with that. I actually really grow tired of places that try to erase history. I think it's dangerous. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I think it's dangerous. And it's just like what you said, some books use the N-word. I mean, if you look at, you know, Mark Twain's writings, I mean, the book has that word in probably every single chapter multiple times. And I know that there were schools that tried, you know, erasing it from there, or you know, taking it out, just so students wouldn't have to read it. But the reality is that you're not teaching people that this is how it was back then, and now look at, we're not allowed to use this word, and this is why. This is where it comes from. So I agree with that. I think in context, it's fine. If someone were to do the song like that today, I think that would be a different story.
I wonder if there's a middle ground for in schools where you produce a version that doesn't have that word, mm-hmm. but you have a section of original text and include that as an example and say, we've removed this because people shouldn't have to have that word in their head, yeah. but this is what it was like.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I just don't like it when... I just think it's dangerous when we start erasing history that we don't think chose anyone or anything about our past in a negative light. I think that's dangerous. And
yes.
people need to understand that back then, this is how it was. And people talked about trans people in this context. And in some ways, still do. And it's still wrong.
Yes.
And, you know, that's what I would use from it. But if, and honestly, if there are no trans people, if they were doing it as a precautionary thing and no trans people actually vocalized being upset about it, I mean, I think that's a little, being a little bit too,
Well, I can see their point. Like, if you have speakers that are throwing the N-word around all the time, just because there happen to be no persons of color in the audience doesn't mean it's still not offensive to the audience as a whole or society as a whole.
I guess. I guess I just look at it differently. If it's in the context of history, like, that's like saying you're at the bookstore and you open up Mark Twain and you start saying that word, you know, for what it is, and then there's people of color sitting in the room. I mean, I understand that might make them feel uncomfortable, but the reality is that's how people talked back then. So
it has to be used productively as a teaching moment rather than just for shock value or for the fact of look what I can say and get away with
exactly.
It. Well, I think it's time for the community calendar now.
Yes, go ahead. Let's go on to the community calendar. And thank you very much, Ari, for joining us in this little discussion. And I'll see by the emails how many of them are angry and not, whether or not folks liked us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Every month, I lead the Kansas City SOFA group for significant others, friends, family, and allies of transgender persons. We meet on the first and third Wednesday of the month. In June, our meetings will be at 6:30 on the 7th and the 21st in Study Room 115 at Leawood Pioneer Library. For driving directions and other SOFA information, you can visit transitcity.org/SOFA. Every Thursday, Transfinity KC will be rehearsing at the Country Club Congregational United Church of Christ at 205 West 65th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, starting at 7 p.m. All are welcome to join, including allies. This coming Wednesday, we'll be singing at the 2017 KC Pride Interfaith Service, which starts at 7 p.m. at Country Club Congregational United Church of Christ. And again, we'll be singing at Pride at 7 p.m. on Saturday, June 2nd. For more details about the KC Pride schedule this year, you can find them on Facebook at www.facebook.com/KC Pride or at www.gaypridekc.org. There is also, I have got an announcement. This is the Light Me Lighthouse, Kansas City, has been renamed to Kansas City Center for Inclusion. All of our next meetings are held there, and The Equal Trans Support Group meets there every third Thursday at 5 p.m. They also have a Friends Plus Allies meeting on the second Monday of the month at 6 p.m., also at the Kansas City Center for Inclusion, which is a couple of doors down from our studio at 3909 Main Street, Kansas City, Missouri. The Kansas City PFLAG chapter meets at 3 p.m. at the Village Presbyterian Church in Ferry Village, and on the fourth Sunday of the month at 3 p.m. at what was Like Me Lighthouse. I'll actually be speaking at their meeting on the 11th of June, and if this went by too fast for you to write down, you can find it on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/10thvoice. And I'm Fiona Nalling, and that's the community calendar for the upcoming month.
Well, thank you very much, Fiona. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners out there for tuning into Trans Talk, this week's edition of the 10th Voice. Many thanks to our special guests, Nurse Kim Tilson, my bro-cephas, Ari Copeland, our sound engineer and producer, Linda Wilson, and last but not least, my co-host, Fiona Nowling. And Heather Jean, if you're still out there listening to us, keep the faith and send me another letter. Remember that you can always send an email with your thoughts and suggestions to the 10th voice, all one word, at gmail.com, and don't put in all one word because that won't work. Next up, stay tuned for This Way Out, followed by Wings, and then Every Woman with Sharon Lockhart and Amy Bell. And be sure to join the 10th Voice next weekend as well, Saturday at 1 p.m., as we'll have more discussion of LGBT topics and